Hey, I'm Jacob Lewis, and you're listening to Neighbors. This episode of Neighbors is brought to you by Dairy King. Come on by for a juicy gold burger, delicious shake, or classic meat and three fare. And if you're having a large event, Dairy King is a perfect catering option. Dairy King, serving home-cooked meals since 1970. Located on East Thompson Lane in Nashville, Tennessee. So I've been on a long hiatus. Sue me. But it was for a good reason. Well, two, actually. One was that I went to radio school, so to speak. I went to the Transom Story Workshop on Cape Cod and learned radio for 2 months. I was back in Nashville for a week and promptly left on a 5-week road trip with my wife. We were celebrating 5 years of marriage. That's 1 week for every year. We partied in New Orleans. We swam in the cool waters of Austin. We hiked down into the Grand Canyon and camped for the night. It was awesome, but I'm glad to be home. I'm busy working on the next season of Neighbors. The first episode comes out August 15th, and it's called Fire. But that's a month away. This is now. Today's episode, it's a sad one. A story I produced at Transom. When I was there, I came across a story about a funeral. I've been to a handful of funerals in my life. I've even seen dead bodies before. But I've never experienced anything quite like the Vos family did. You know, most families let a funeral home take their loved one from the morgue and handle the arrangements all the way until the burial. That's not how they did it. I'll just play you the story. It's called Bringing Wes Home. 15 people were piled in a silver Ford truck. It was driving slowly down Water Street in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. A stream of people were behind it. Teenagers, women carrying babies, older people on bikes. As they moved along, the crowd got larger. People came out of businesses and joined the procession. There were young men in suits, cigarettes dangling out of their mouths. Some were holding onto the truck, being pulled along on their skateboards. They all cheered as one of them went down a hill and passed the truck. And the cheers broke into sobs. Jane Vos sat atop a homemade casket in the bed of the truck. They were taking her son to the graveyard. It was just a few days earlier that Jane got a call in the middle of the night. It was the hospital. Her son Wes had been in a serious car accident. He was 22. They asked if Jane and her husband, John, would come. The doctor would like to talk to them in person.
So, all the way there, I had not a good feeling. Not a good feeling.
You know, they don't want to tell you the condition or on the phone. Like, well, how is he? Come up, the doctor will explain it to you or whatever. There's some foreboding there.
The doctor came in and he said, "Are you Wes Vos's parents?" "Yes." "Well, I'm sorry to tell you, your son is deceased." I think that was his word, deceased.
Well, I knew immediately, I knew that I didn't want to send him off with strangers. You know, I didn't want his body prepared by strangers who, you know, for them, he's just another body. You know, he's nothing personal. They don't know him or anything, so I figured we'd get him home here.
But the Voses didn't know how. They knew about home funerals, but they didn't know if they could get Wes's body because he was in an accident. So they called their friend Heather, who was a home funeral guide and educator. She walked with them through the process and assured them that they had the right to bring Wes's body home. So John and six other guys went to the morgue. There was no hearse, no ambulance. They showed up in a Toyota minivan.
And then they said, "Well, go around to those doors in the back, you know, big garage doors." And we backed up there, and there was two technicians came out with, you know, the white jackets. They went in another room and got him and brought him out and, in a body bag. And we put the body bag in the casket and, you know, put it in the van. But they were touched. They both had tears in their eyes when we left. So I don't think they ever see the family and friends coming to get the body.
Back at the Vos's house, Jane and others were preparing a room for Wes. Heather loaned them a massage table. That's where the body would go to be cleaned and dressed. So when the minivan arrived, Wes's body was carried to that table. Dirt and bits of glass had to be removed from Wes's skin, the tragic reality of the violence of his death. But for the next 5 hours, Jane and four other women faced that reality. They meticulously cleaned every inch of his body, every crease, every fingernail. When they were done, they rubbed his skin with lavender oil.
And it wasn't, it wasn't creepy or anything to touch him. It was like holding his hands, washing his feet. It was nice.
The family dressed Wes in his jean jacket. He had cut off the sleeves and sewn patches on it. Woods Hole, his hometown, was written across the back. I sat down with Jane and John in their house. They showed me pictures of Wes's life, photos of him swimming and doing kung fu. But then John casually mentioned he had some others of Wes in his casket. Before I knew it, there on his screen was a photo of the body. And it wasn't weird. I had really expected it to be. And I don't know why this is, I just know that the pictures I saw of him lying in a homemade coffin, they were more holy than anything else. He was just so well cared for, so loved. It was real, just like Wes.
I guess the first thing anyone would tell you is he's a free spirit, was always a free spirit.
Wes's friend Ben says Wes was a talented and funny kid. He had long, flowing blonde hair, and everyone I talked to said he was athletic. He was known for going down steep hills on a longboard, and especially for his dancing. He liked ironic hip-hop and Tales from the Crypt, and doing stand-up comedy, and he was really into producing homemade movies. He made one with his brother Luke.
He had one called Ninja that was really cool. It had like a mix of comedy and like cop drama.
I want this case, sir.
That's Wes. He was only 14 when he made Ninja. In the movie, there's been a murder on Cape Cod, and a note was left at the crime scene that says two words, Ninjas rule. Wes plays Detective Sterling, and his brother Luke plays the police chief.
I want you on this case. You're about the only damn guy who can do a thing about this. The only thing is, you need a partner.
Now, Chief, you know I've never worked with a partner before.
I'm not putting you out there on your own again. You're a loose damn cannon, and you know that. You're a liability, and my neck is already so far on the freaking line, it's stretching.
I've never worked with a partner before, sir.
Well, you're going to work with a partner if you're going to work for me, okay, Sterling? I'm tired of your hotshot antics.
All right, Chief. Got me.
You got a heart of gold, but you can be a real hard ass.
Sometimes. I watched 6 hours of Wes's footage. Most of that was home movies of him just goofing around. And I saw that, like the character he played in Ninja, he was a loose cannon. But the kind you wanted to be around, the kind that drew people together.
Yeah, lots of people were here for that whole, two or three days we had him here, and it was, it must have been between 20 and 40 people here all the time. And his friends would come over at night and hang out in the garage, and we worked on the casket for a couple days anyway, which was good because it was like, we don't want to just put him in some store-bought thing. This would be more to what he would like.
The casket was a plain wooden box with rope handles. As they worked on it, Wes's body lay on the massage table in the other room. Someone suggested to Luke that he go in and have a private moment with his brother's body. He told him he loved him and he missed him, but he had other emotions too.
It was pretty intense. I felt kind of angry with him in some ways, like, how could you be so stupid? You know what I mean? Like, how could you drive so fast in that car that, like, you knew was a fast car? Like, how could you not be more careful, kind of? You know what I mean? Like, this is so dumb. You know what I mean? That this is the price we're having to pay for, like, carelessness.
John, did you, like, have a private moment and say anything, like, to Wes? Is that something that you...
I still talk to Wes, but the... I did have private moments with him after he died, but I can't remember what I said particularly. I think basically what it was is, I will always love you. And then what I get from him is, he will always love me, you know?
As people came by to visit Wes, they started to put things on his body. a hat, flowers, his baby blanket. On the night before his burial, someone placed a laptop on Wes's knees. People gathered around as they watched Wes's movie Ninja, literally over his dead body. It was a moment of strange levity. Eventually, West was placed in his casket and sealed up. They moved the coffin to the back of a silver truck and made their way to the cemetery. His mother, sitting atop the casket. The sound you're hearing comes from a family friend's video of Wes's service. The church was packed. A local bakery had baked a 5-foot challah bread. A priest and different family members spoke about Wes. And at the end, Luke's band played. Wes's dad, John, said when he left the church, there were 200 people on the lawn that didn't even make it in. And another building across the street had even more people in it.
And you know, when it was over, you know, with all that upbeat music was, you know, little people were dancing, and, you know, I felt, you know, pretty uplifted at the end, leaving. So, yeah, it was quite an experience.
At the burial, family and friends sat the casket on two boards straddling an open grave. John was wearing leather work gloves. He unscrewed the lid with a screwdriver. As he opened the casket, he said, "It's hard to hear, but he says, if you want to take one last look at our beloved boy here." Wes's sister knelt down and kissed his body. People put small tokens in the casket. Someone put in the key to their house. Then they closed the casket and lowered him into the ground.
Most of the funerals I've been to, you leave and the casket is still sitting on top of the ground, and then there again, strangers come back and fill it in.
Some more shovels here if anybody wants to help.
A dozen people grabbed shovels and started to cover the casket. And then they lit fireworks.
About our age, and he sat down there for 5 or 10 minutes, and then he got up to leave, and he said, "This was the most meaningful experience I've had in my life." You know, and I didn't even know Wes that well. It was just, you know, just that, you know, dealing with death in that way, you know. And I think perhaps some people, I don't know, but I think some people don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
They you know, somebody they love died, they want to just, okay, let somebody else deal with it. It's too difficult. And our daughter said, you know, at first she said, "Gee, I don't know if I can face having him here and seeing him here." But then afterwards she said it was much more meaningful. It was tremendous help having him here, you know, getting to spend all that much more time with him, you know.
It seems grief has an impulse to do something. Perhaps it needs to clean a body, build a casket, or dig a hole. Or maybe like Wes's brother Luke, it needs to write a song. Luke wrote this one about Wes. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Jacob Lewis.
Who rocked the party that rocked the body? Rock the party for the dearly departed, for the broken hearted, for the closed coffin, for the cold darkness that we're so lost in. It's funny what music will do. My feet stuck to the floor like super glue until I got a little something I could two-step to, and then I dance with the dead, pay respect to. I hope you got a chance to see him at his best, to see the way he danced when he was in the flesh, to see the way he dressed when he was really fresh. A wild Apache with patches on his vest. And we're dancing with the dead that are dancing in our head. When we're dancing, it's just fine until the end of the line. Until the end of the line.
Special thanks to the Vos family. If you like that song you heard at the end there, that's Luke Vos's band. They're called Crooked Coast. I think they sound like all the best things about alternative rock in the year 1999. And I mean that as a compliment. There's a link up on the blog. Also, my colleagues at the Transom Story Workshop produced some amazing pieces. There's a link to their work at neighborspodcast.com. Thanks.